From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 8th day of February, 2011. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities. He's in Newmarket, Indiana. A bit later in the program, Gary Schnitke will be here to take a look back at the Freedom to Farm Act from the mid-1990s and how acreage has adjusted across the United States to accommodate free markets. Also this afternoon, a new edition of In My Backyard from Lisa Braltz. And as we close out our half hour, we'll hear from Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, right here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
In Chicago, on this Tuesday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby contract in the soft red winter wheat pit was up 15.5 cents at $1.74 and a quarter. May futures at $9.06, up 15.5, and July, $9.32 and a half, up 15.75. September futures at $9.56, up 15.5. The hard red March at $9.72, up 18.5 on the day. From the corn pit, the nearby March contract at $6.73 and three quarters, down a penny. The May at $6.84 and three quarters, down one. And July corn at $6.91 and a half, unchanged for the day. September future, $6.44 and a quarter, a half higher. And December contract up 2.5 cents at $6.04 and a half cents. Next year's March at $6.14 and three quarters, up 3 cents on the afternoon. March soybeans at $14.34 and a quarter, up 9 and three quarters for the day. May futures at $14.46. 10.5 higher, and July at $14.53 and a quarter, up 10 and a quarter. August contract $14.29, 11.5 higher. September at $14 and a penny, up 12 cents. November beans $13.77 and a half, up 11 and a half. March bean meal futures at $3.85.70, up 3.30. Oil at $58.77, up 36 cents. Live cattle futures February contracted $107.65, 7.5 cents lower on the day. April futures at $111.25, down 50 cents. The March feeders at $124.25, down 32.5. And the April contract 65 cents lower at $125.85. February lean hog futures on the afternoon at $84.82.5, down 12.5 cents. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Tuesday afternoon and a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures, $86.94 a barrel, down 54 cents. Ethanol at $2.38 and 7 cents. That's a penny and a tenth lower. Natural gas at $4.05 and a tenth of a cent, down 5 and 4 tenths of a cent. And the RBOB at $2.49 and a half cents, up 4 and 4 tenths of a cent. Heating oil at $2.73 and a half. That's 2 and 9 tenths lower on the diesel fuel slash heating oil. And the gold futures at $1,363.40 an ounce, up $15.80. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at 12,215, just about 54 points higher on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area. This afternoon, mostly sunny, cold, a high near just 9 degrees today. Wind chill values between negative 2 and negative 7. Northwest winds between 9 and 13 miles to the hour. Tonight, partly cloudy, a low around 8 degrees. Wind chill values between negative 1 and negative 6. West-northwest winds between 7 and 9. And on Wednesday, should be mostly sunny. A high near 16 degrees. Wind chill values between negative 5 and 3 above.
The 21st annual All-Day Agricultural Outlook meeting is sure to attract a crowd. Among those presenting March 8th at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana, Murray Wise from Murray Wise Associates, Joe Vaklovic from MF Global, Roy Huckabee from the Lind Group, and Tom Fritz from EFG. Avoid the long registration line by calling 800-528-7980. The cost of the ticket is $20 and includes a continental breakfast and lunch. When you register with your major credit card, we'll mail your tickets good for our VIP line. The number to call is 800-528-7980.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Tuesday afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason on the phone line with us today to take a look at the agricultural commodity markets. Wayne Nelson with L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Wayne.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
I see that the folks were in commercials at least today buying some wheat. That on ideas, the export business is going to be pretty good, I suppose.
Well, you know, there's a couple things in the wheat market. Number one, of course, Jordan had a purchase, but it was largely expected. And then there's some other tenders coming up the next 5 to 7 days. There's dry weather over the northern part of China, and there's extremely cold weather coming across the wheat belt with a very thin layer of snow out there and a lot of talk of winter kill as far as the crop ratings are going or possibility of winter kill, Todd. So all that thrown together has shown a little commercial interest in the wheat market.
It's up on the high end of its range, actually making, well, it's up on the very top end of its range. Do you think there's much more upside potential in it?
Well, you know, I mean, I think that's going to come a lot in what we do see as far as the weather progresses in China and how much wheat and what the wheat looks like a little later this spring when the when we start in and see if it grows back or whether it's going to be torn up or not. But, I mean, for right now, this seems like it should be high enough that we can't plant much more wheat right now. So I think, you know, some of the things that happened in Egypt and some of the other countries just a little bit scared about having food price riots and whatever along the way are being aggressive buyers of the wheat out there, and that's what's keeping this market very hot.
Turn your attention to the southern U.S. The cotton growers over the weekend said they'd plant 14% more cotton this year than they did last year. Last year they didn't plant a lot of cotton, though. What'd you make of that, and what are you hearing from the office that you have in the South?
Well, I think that, you know, the cotton is becoming much more attractive to plant that way. You know, we saw a little bit of problems coming in here to how the cotton market turned around when they run into the speculation where the CFTC or the mercantile basically come in and limited the amount of speculative trading in the delivery month.
Right.
That sort of took the steam out of a lot of stuff, but some tremendously high prices have been offered and looked in there, and I think that we are going to see more cotton acres because a lot of those guys really do like to grow cotton down in the Mid-South, and that they like it better than growing corn, that's for sure. So I think we're going to see a little increase there, and of course that nicks into bean acres.
Yeah, for clarification's sake, I think if I remember right, cotton is traded on ICE, or is it called ICE?
I said the mark and I was wrong.
Yeah, so it's traded on the ICE, and that it was the board there, not the CFTC, that said, hey,
right,
we want to make sure that things are orderly. And they didn't change the number of contracts and the spec particularly. They just said if you're over 300, I think it was 300 contracts.
It was 300.
Yeah, if you're over 300 contracts, we told you before we'd look at you and say if what was okay or not. Didn't really do that. Now we're going to do it, I think, is kind of what
it's more. It was a scare tech like that, but there is talk that the CFTC would use this in some other commodities if the food inflation continues at the rate it's been going in the world.
Yeah, so CFTC has not stepped in, but
they did not step in. It was the exchange themselves that did step on this, but there was comments made by individuals that wanted to remain anonymous that said the CFTC was closely looking at what happened there and how it worked.
All right, now let's turn our attention to the other commodities, corn and soybeans. What are producers asking you today?
Basically, do we think the report's going to say anything wild or exciting to change anything tomorrow? We don't really think so. We think there'll be some adjustments in the South American production. The weather has improved since our last report. Things have got better down there. I think we'll see, you know, an increase in Brazilian corn and bean and probably some in the Argentine like that. The thing that we probably won't see changed will be the export numbers, but there's a few people that are becoming very skeptical that the corn numbers on the export end of things aren't holding up real well, but the ethanol usage and feed usage, especially with all the cold weather we had over the last couple weeks and coming in for this week, probably kept the feed usage very high.
Yeah, that report due out at 7:30 a.m. tomorrow morning. Dave Dickey's already put together a portion of the newsletter that will be updated with those numbers. If you haven't gotten it already, you can always go to our website and see the updated numbers. Dave will post those about 7:30, not long after the United States Department of Agriculture updates the report that comes out at 7:30 a.m. tomorrow morning. Anything else going on that we ought to know about?
Well, I think that, you know, most of the farmers have made what they want to make as far as that. We have a lot of nervousness out there of, I don't want to miss these great opportunities, but I also see the possibility for great things to rise again. So we're seeing a much higher anticipation or feeling of the farm community out there that I think that they're willing to use some puts at this point in time.
They're willing to use some puts. Speaking of which, you also happen to sell crop insurance. Getting many questions about what they ought to be doing with that. And what are the things that are, there are some new things with crop insurance that farmers will run into?
Yeah, that you can increase the level of coverage if you plant the second generation soybeans by Monsanto. Monsanto is going to back a policy to insure probably another 10% of your APH going along the way. Of course, the increased planting and different ideas along those lines that are actually the crop insurance will remain the same as it is with has been with the government. They changed the names of a couple things, but it's still the same old revenue and yield policies, and of course the group policies are out there, but there are different things that different insurance companies are adding as to make it be a little bit different, higher replant populations, higher replant payments can be bought up to and different things like that, Todd. But, you know, we're starting out very good. Here we are. You know, we're just got about a fourth of the month in for the crop average for what we're going to have for prices, and they're going to be extremely high.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Todd.
That's Wayne Nelson. He's with L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report each and every Thursday, or rather Tuesday afternoon.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
Up next, the 1995 Freedom to Farm legislation, adopted by the U.S. Congress, discarded many of the restrictions that had previously caused farmers not to change crops. Under it, as you know, and Farm Bill since that time, producers have been able to participate in the farm programs and still make their own cropping choices. A study by the U of I looked at how the acreage patterns have shifted in the United States since the Freedom to Farm Act was put in place in the mid-1990s. I have the details in a moment. The 1995 Freedom to Farm Act gave producers the option to plant what they believed to be their most competitive crops and still participate in the farm program. That choice tenet still underlies today's Farm Bill legislation, and when comparing the five-year period just before its enactment to the last 5 years, 2005, 6, 7, 8, and 9, there are clear-cut winners and losers in terms of crops and acreage, says University of Illinois farm management specialist Gary Schnittke.
What we saw is a movement towards soybeans and corn, and soybeans from gained 14 million acres from the early period to 2005 to 2009. Corn gained 9 million. So those two crops were the only crops that gained in acres. The other crops, hay and rice, were stable, but the big losers were wheat, barley, and grain sorghum.
Again, when comparing the era from 1990 to 94 to 2005 to 2009, soybeans and corn grew in acres. Crops losing acres were wheat, barley, and grain sorghum, along with corn silage, cotton, peanuts, dry edible beans, and potatoes. To evaluate acreage changes, data detailing acres harvested in the United States by year were obtained from the National Agricultural Statistics Service. Data were collected for all crops with over 1 million acres harvested in 2008. There were 13 of them: soybeans, corn for grain, hay, rice, wheat, barley, grain sorghum, corn for silage, cotton, peanuts, dry edible beans, potatoes, and sugar beets. Acres harvested were averaged for the years 1990 through 94, the years preceding the passage of the 1995 Farm Bill, and 2005 through 2009. Between the early 90s and the late 2000s, soybeans were the crop with the largest acreage increase. It averaged 58.2 million acres harvested in the early 1990s, increasing to 72.2 million acres in the late 2000s. It's a 14 million acre increase, or about 25%. Corn also had a sizable increase of 9.4 million acres, or about 14% from one period to the other. Wheat had the largest reduction, from 62.8 million acres to 50.7 million acres, or down 19%. The data, says Schnicke, shows the largest increases in corn and soybean acreages were concentrated in the Great Plains and the Greater Corn Belt.
The state that gained the most in corn and soybean acres was North Dakota, gained 4 million acres. And other big gainers were Minnesota, South Dakota, Nebraska, and Kansas.
Again, the commodities with the largest gains over the period pre- and post-Freedom to Farm were soybean and corn. Wheat, barley, grain sorghum, corn for silage, and cotton experienced the largest losses. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Common Ground Food Co-op in Lincoln Square Mall. Community-owned since 1974, Common Ground is a full-service grocer featuring locally grown and organic foods, as well as homemade healthy deli meals. More information is available at 352-3347 or at the co-op.
Hi, this is Illinois Public Media Director of Agricultural Programming, Dave Dickey. Coming up next, comes snow or even the dead of winter is of little consequence when it comes to bagging especially desirable garden seeds, as Lisa Brotz tells us in her latest edition of In My Backyard.
Word on the street a couple of Sundays ago was that the winter storm of the century, the snowpocalypse, if you will, was bearing down on our little square of the Midwest. You wouldn't have known it at the seed swap being held that afternoon in Urbana's Lincoln Square, though. This year's swap was our third annual. A group of us in the neighborhood, calling ourselves Block by Block Cooperation, decided to get a swap going in 2009, mainly as a way to stave off the February blahs and to trade seeds. But it's become so much more than that. Ryan Griffiths and Sarah Ross have helped organize the swap since the beginning.
An initial impetus for it was just getting out and seeing people and starting to think about spring, but also realizing that if you were going to start things from seed, a lot of things have to be started much earlier, but it can be hard to get motivated when there's still snow on the ground. So I think when you're out seeing other people and exchanging ideas and knowledge about seeds, it's a bit of a push to be like, oh yeah, I need to get this stuff started. I need to get my lights on. I need to get the seeds in soil.
But if I remember correctly, we sort of got together and thought about, you know, this. We had this place that we can now grow things, and we were talking with other neighbors like yourself and wondering how do you get things started, and that there's a couple of things that's sort of amazing about the seed swap is that plants give you way more than you really need. You know, there's a lot of seeds per one plant, and so it was a way to share resources. Buying plants from start can be expensive, and it was also a way to share knowledge, to meet new people, and sort of build or continue to build what is already an interesting culture of people here in this town that are doing all kinds of activities related to gardens and foods and thinking about, you know, the health and wealth of their bodies and their community.
The first seed swap we did featured speakers. Kit Condell of Revolution Seeds came and talked about the importance of seed saving, among other things, and I did a brief demonstration of how to set up grow lights for early season seed starting. I think people were okay with having speakers, but after we presented our presentations and people finally got started swapping seeds, it was clear that that's what they'd come for, the hanging out and the talking to each other and the trading of stuff. We changed it up for the following year's swap.
The second and third year, we didn't have a specified speaker, but instead invited people to sort of set up info tables. And so last year we had someone who cut potato eyes and talked about starting potatoes. We also had people, someone who had information on beekeeping and somebody who came from one of the cooperative houses here in Urbana and talked about fruit trees in Urbana. So that was an exciting thing.
Another big change this year, not having the swap on Super Bowl Sunday. Seriously, our attendance last year, vigorous at first, took a serious dive as the afternoon went on. Anyway, the swap's visitors aren't your stereotypical gardeners. They're young people and elder people, men and women, expert and novice. Some of them browse, some are super organized. This year, from my spot staffing an information table, I watched a guy in his 20s, dressed like it was casual Friday at work rather than a lazy Sunday afternoon, methodically and thoroughly go through every seed packet on each of the three tables. He had a box for his seeds, complete with a filing system and a checklist, and he was at the swap for its entirety 3 hours, and he barely spoke with anyone. Talk about focused. I also helped a woman in her 60s get some information about keeping backyard chickens, and our friend and fruit tree expert JP talked with kids and their parents about planting pawpaw trees.
The first year, I had no idea what to expect in terms of who would show up. It was hard for me to imagine anybody who wasn't just like us showing up. But I think that was quickly, you know, my myth about there would just be people like us showing up was dispelled. And there was a pretty big range generationally and where people were coming from and their interest in things. And, you know, there were older people who were interested in gardening who didn't always know that much. And then there were older people who were extremely knowledgeable about all kinds of things that they had been doing for years and years. And then there were younger people who showed up who knew tons and had become really invested in doing sort of rigorous home gardening. And then there were young people like us who were just learning and didn't really know that much. And so it really ran the gamut.
Several master gardeners came by armed with seeds, giving the swap's usually weak flower seed inventory a boost. Some people brought bags of heirloom bean and sweet corn seeds they'd collected from their own gardens last year. Others just brought seeds they didn't use the year before. This is okay because seeds are usually viable for at least a few years if they're stored properly. There was an abundance of squash and melon seeds, as well as seeds for different types of lettuce. Tomatoes, though, it was a down year, at least for the seeds. No one's sure why. Late winter seed swapping as beneficial social event is catching on. Sarah knows of one swap that just had its second annual event in Carbondale, Illinois, inspired by a visit to that first one in Urbana in 2009. Ryan wants to see Urbana's swap become more of an influence in the local gardening community. He hopes to reach out more to groups that have community or school gardens, maybe bringing swap activities to areas served by these gardens to facilitate participation. For Sarah, it just felt excellent this year to know that people appreciate the swap, that they look forward to it and mark it on their calendars and tell their friends about it.
At this year's seed swap, I did overhear these two people talking about they had been coming from the first year and that they just thought it was an amazing event and a real opportunity to share and to learn. So that was kind of exciting and affirmed that we should continue to do it.
Well, I love my seed catalogs and plan to seriously get into them next week. There's just nothing more fun for this garden geek anyway in late January or February than swapping seeds and sharing gardening information. Well, except maybe the snowpocalypse.
Lisa Broth's stories can also be heard on our website, WILLAG.org. Click on the In My Backyard link in the right navigation window. And you can also read her occasional blogs at majorprogression.wordpress.com. If you have an idea for In My Backyard, email us at willagstaff@illinois.edu. That's willagstaff@illinois.edu.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Tuesday afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason, back in a couple minutes when we'll talk with Don Day of Day Weather. Out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, dial this number now if you can, 800-528-7980. Just 90 tickets left for our All-Day Ag Outlook meeting. I'll be back in two with the Ag Weather.
It's National Molasses Bar Day. Up until the 1880s, molasses was the most popular sweetener in the U.S. because it was much cheaper than refined sugar. But by 1919, U.S. per capita consumption of white sugar was twice what it was in 1880, with most Americans completely switching from molasses to granulated white and brown sugar. By the way, in January of 1919, a huge vat of molasses at the Purity Distilling Company in Boston exploded. What came to be known as the Great Molasses Flood killed 21 people and spilled 2 million gallons of molasses into the streets. On this day in agricultural history in 1802, Simpson Grafton of Massachusetts patented what he called an 8-day improved timepiece, better known as the banjo clock, a small inexpensive clock which could be purchased by those without means in the New World. In 1878, Ellis Fries died, a Swedish botanist. He developed the first system used to classify fungi. In 1886, Wilhelm Koppers was born. This cultural anthropologist developed theories on the origins of society based on studies of hunter-gatherer tribes. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Tuesday afternoon. Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming is on the phone with us to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. Hey, Don, it got really cold here last night, and I hope you can tell me it's going to get warmer by the weekend. Is that the case?
Well, yeah, we've got to exercise some patience. It will get warmer, but it's going to take until the weekend really to get much warmer. There's another arc air mass coming out of Western Canada, the Northern Plains and Rockies. Not as cold as last week's wave, but still an Arctic one nonetheless. Most of the nation east of the Rockies will be below normal until we get into the weekend and early next week. And a good portion of the United States will get a little bit of a thaw developing next week. And also with that warmer weather pattern will be a pattern that won't be quite as stormy, not quite as moist.
And then take a look around the rest of the globe. I haven't checked in on that for quite some time. Tell me how the growing regions are doing in South America.
Well, South America, it's the same song and dance. Precipitation has been skimpy in Argentina. That trend has continued, and that trend continues in the next week, while a little bit more moist in Brazil. Over in Australia, they're still stormy, and it still looks to be wet in the northern and eastern growing areas.
And let's come back to the northern hemisphere and hopscotch across to it, checking in on how things are setting up for the growing season in China, Ukraine, France, America, if you'd like.
Well, good news for some of the wheat country of Kansas, Oklahoma, and the panhandle of Texas. In the last week, they've gotten a little bit of precipitation with this icy, snowy weather, and they're getting some snow now in some of the real dry areas of western and southwest Kansas, across the panhandle of Oklahoma. Oklahoma and the Texas panhandle going to get some decent precipitation here over the next 24 to 36 hours, so some good news there.
All right. Thank you so much for taking the time with us today.
Thank you, sir.
Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, joins us here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. A reminder as we close out our half-hour program today to sign up for our all-day Ag Outlook meeting. It's easy to do. Actually, all you have to do is call this number. It's 800-528-7980. The all-day Ag Outlook meeting, it's the Beef House in Covington, Indiana, as usual. $20 for the tickets. They'll pay for your event all day long, including a bit of something for breakfast, your meal at the noon hour, and all of the folks that are along with us for the best marketing event of the year. Call now, 800-528-7980, to reserve your ticket so you can walk right in the door. On the 8th day of March, that's a Tuesday, at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. Again, the number to call, 800-528-7980. You have a very good afternoon. This has been the Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason.
agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.